This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV nationwide and also listen to it on Pacifica radio stations. Exactly a year before he was brutally assassinated, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. gave one of the most important speeches of his life, called Beyond Vietnam. In the speech, which elites like to ignore, Dr. King addressed the, quote, giant triplets of racism, extreme materialism, and militarism. This week is the 50th anniversary of that speech, and while the U.S. is no longer mired in the Vietnam War, we have enmeshed ourselves in many more wars, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, and more. The U.S. military budget, already the largest of any nation by far, consumes an ever greater share of our tax dollars. With Donald Trump's promise to raise the warfighting budget by a whopping 10%, it's time to remind ourselves just how lopsided our national priorities remain. My guest is Lindsay Koshgarian. She is a research director at the National Priorities Project and the author of a new report on our militarized budget. Welcome to the program, Lindsay.
Thank you for having me.
So we often talk about the military budget. You've written about the militarized budget. What does that mean?
Well, at National Priorities Project, we're all about the federal budget, and we're accustomed to putting together analyses of the federal budget that look at the military budget, as you noticed. The military budget includes things like the Pentagon, Department of Defense, our armed troops, nuclear weapons, and assistance to foreign militaries. And when we look at that, we see that it amounts to over half of our federal discretionary budget, which is the budget that Congress allocates each year. So what we decided was we wanted to think about the rest of the budget, that other less than half that typically we don't call military, but we know that a lot of it goes to things like incarceration, federal prisons. A lot of it is for the Department of Homeland Security, which includes things like U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or USICE, the folks that you see doing raids for undocumented people around the country, and things like that. And it's really not fair to consider those together with things like job training or things like after-school programs or other things that really help to build community and help working families. And so what we wanted to do was take a look at how much as a country we're actually investing in control and tactics of violence, and to see how we're investing in those things and disinvesting in our countries. And so we came up with this concept of the militarized budget that includes both the traditional military budget, but also things like homeland security, immigration enforcement, incarceration, and the war on drugs, which is still ongoing.
And so when we take those into account, we get an extremely skewed picture. If you look at our tax dollars as a pie, the majority of the pie goes towards, as you put it, funding force.
That's right. When you look at the traditional military budget, you see that it takes up 53% of the budget that Congress allocates each year. But when you look at the militarized budget, including all of those other things, you see that it actually takes up 64% of the budget that Congress allocates each year. So we have kind of a measly 36% that's left over for programs that actually help to build communities and strengthen lives. And some of the things that Americans say are their top priorities for the federal government, like education and jobs and healthcare.
Let's hear Donald Trump explaining, justifying his 10% raise for just the military budget. This was a few weeks ago.
Fast. One of the most important responsibilities for the federal government is the budget of the United States. My first budget will be submitted to the Congress next month. This budget will be a public safety and national security budget, very much based on those two, with plenty of other things, but very strong. And it will include a historic increase in defense spending to rebuild the depleted military of the United States of America at a time we most need it.
Donald Trump talking about our military is depleted and that needs funding. The two things that he said there, Lindsay, that I think are really important, he used two phrases and two phrases alone to characterize his government budget, public safety and national security. If you interpret public safety as he does through increased funding for homeland security and law enforcement, then he is looking at our entire government budget through the lens of force, right?
Yes, he is defining public safety as force, control, targeting people. The one important thing that I think about that is that it's a public safety definition that is extremely harsh, especially toward Black and brown people in this country.
It is exactly the opposite of their public safety, of our public safety.
Yes, it is. Yes, we know that we have skyrocketing incarceration in this country. We know that it has affected Black and brown people far more than it has white people. And I would venture to say that Trump knows that too. If you look at the spending, the federal spending on prisons, federal prisons, over the last several decades, from 1976 until 2016, you see that we've now spent 10 times more on prisons than we did in 1976. 10 times. This is a trend that has been going on for a long time, but Donald Trump is almost crystallizing it. He's talking about taking it to the next level.
So it's not just the military budget, which he's upping by 10%, but the other aspects of our militarized budget that he's also increasing. But of course, it seems as though what he's doing is continuing a trend that was established before he came in, right? It's not as though these agencies or these parts of our budget were necessarily stagnating, although under President Obama, there were cuts to the increases in military spending.
Yes, President Obama did cut military spending a little bit from what it was during its recent height under the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. But even as Obama left office, our military spending on what we call on the traditional military was higher than it was on average under President Ronald Reagan, who was known for his military buildup. So we were already we've already been on this trend for a long time, but President Trump is really talking about making it the law of the land and kind of this is his ideology. And, you know, I think that in addition to seeing the way that spending on federal prisons has skyrocketed, we've seen something similar with spending on immigration enforcement and control, deportations and raids and border agents and all of these things that are kind of coming to the fore now. But it's been happening for a long time. And I think that in many ways, the American people have gotten used to it. But if you look at the cuts and the spending cuts versus the spending increases that President Trump has proposed, all of his increases pretty much are on the militarized side. He's talking about a 10% increase for the military. He's talking about new spending on border agents and on a border wall and increasing the spending for deportations and raids. And then he's talking about cutting everything that what we might think of as public safety. He's talking about cuts to education, cuts to healthcare, cuts to housing, cuts to job training. And it's really startling. If you look, we have one figure that if you look at job training federal funding, it's actually decreased over the same time period that federal prison spending has increased. So this is our policy as a country, to invest in prisons and disinvest in things like job training and education.
So those increases to the militarized part of our budget obviously are coming at the expense of all of these other things that are far more constructive, that actually build up societies rather than tear them down. And that, of course, is exactly the kind of problem that the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was addressing 50 years ago this week.
Unfortunately, that is true. We have not escaped that paradigm.
And of course, we as a country, our mainstream likes to remember the civil rights part of Dr. King's work. We like to forget the anti-war and the anti-poverty parts of his ideology, which all go hand in hand, right?
Yes, that's right. And Reverend King took a lot of heat for his Beyond Vietnam speech when he made it 50 years ago today. And it was actually a year to the day after that speech that he was assassinated.
Yep.
And it's been cited often as one of the possible reasons for his assassination. It was not a message that many Americans wanted to hear. And it probably still is not a message that many Americans want to hear today, but it remains true.
And he basically said the giant triplets are racism, extreme materialism, and militarism. And that these are being considered more important than people. It's so important that we sort of remind ourselves that these were issues that were identified all these years ago by somebody that, you know, the country as a whole now accepts we should look up to, but we reject those parts of his analysis. So, Lindsay.
Yes, he's widely regarded as a visionary, but people don't know enough about these words that were really visionary.
So finally, how can people take the work? How can ordinary Americans who are troubled by this ongoing direction that is now kind of on steroids under Trump, how can people take the work that you've done, the stats that you've put together, the clear figures and your pretty concise 6-page report and use it as a tool to say, this is not what we want?
I think in a couple of ways. One is there are a lot of Americans who still don't really understand what is meant when we talk about things like institutional or systematic racism. One way is to, some of those charts speak very clearly to that. If you look at the way that we've invested in prisons, it speaks very clearly to that. So one way is to use it to educate ourselves and educate other people. But another way, in a more directly impactful way, is to remember that President Trump gets a lot of attention and he certainly puts forth a lot of bluster, but he does not actually have the power over the budget. In our country, according to our Constitution, it is Congress that has the power of the purse. It is Congress that sets the United States budget. And it is Congress that is accountable to us as Americans to set the budget that we want to see. We've seen lately that a lot of people are contacting their members of Congress, and we are seeing that it's actually working. And so I would say we need to keep it up and double down on that pressure. Call your member of Congress, get a group of citizens together to meet with your member of Congress, take them this report, talk to them about what you see in it, and talk to them about the budget that you want to see.
And where is the best place to get a hold of this report online?
At nationalpriorities.org.
And we'll post a link to nationalpriorities.org from our website later today. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us and for the work you do.
Thank you.
My guest is Lindsay Kashgarian. She is a research director at National Priorities Project. We've been talking about her paper on the militarized budget of the United States under Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.